Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. During the month of love, we've shared conversations from Fiona Lucas about fostering love and relationships, whilst understanding the devastating impact of trauma, resentment, and alienation with Beck Thompson and Charlie McCready. Everything we do, say, and feel is picked up on by children. Whether they're family or not, children observe us every day. How we interact is what they learn about human behaviour. Generations have been raised without a voice. The old saying, children should be seen and not heard, is a common phrase many people over 35 will be familiar with. Do what I say, not what I do, is another. Social entrepreneur Neil Milton grew up with those standards and is keen to empower children to ensure they have a voice, and with good reason. Following his own childhood experience of not being heard, he knew he had to make space for his children to feel safe and trust in those closest. Neil, your son has struggled with his mental health. How has allowing him to express himself helped you help him?
I asked my son once, I said, so describe to me what it's like living with severe depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. And he said, it's like sitting in a room with no windows or doors in the dark. And I said, that must be horrific for you, you know, what that must feel like. And I said, we need to punch a door in, you know, we need to create a door, whatever it is. Because as soon as you let some light in, it's no longer a dark room. And we need to keep letting light in so that you feel like there's another way out. You know, he's an 18-year-old kid now, and he told me that when he was about 11 because he was suicidal when he was 10, so.
My son sadly went through a similar experience around the same age and one day told me that he wished he was dead, which made me feel absolutely bereft that he felt that way so young. Having also felt that way myself, I knew I had to seek professional help. What was your first reaction?
My first step as a parent was to make sure he's okay. The thing for me is that it was, you know, he was 10 years old. He's been bullied at school. He was just getting, I don't know, he was pretty down, pretty upset, pretty worried. And my wife was, she's very intuitive. And she sort of said to him, have you thought about ending your life? And to our surprise, he had. And he said, I've got a plan, like, you know, 10 years old. So anyway, what we did is we went to a GP. While he was sitting in the GP, we actually spoke to a good GP. And they got him onto a service that he could have a conversation with. And then from there, we got him into a psychologist who he's been seeing since 10 years old. He's now 18 years old. So that's pretty life-changing for me. But I think it was actually about him knowing that we would fight for him. And I think that's super important that, you know, some parents would say, oh, you've just got to sort of, you know, they've got to make their own way or whatever it is. But I actually really believe our major responsibility is to keep our children safe. And that actually means that we need to respond in crisis times. It's not about them finding their own way in the times of crisis. It's about us guiding them in the times of crisis. And so we were able to help him to navigate that. And I think it's going to be a constant battle for him. But he knows he's got mum and dad there, you know.
It sounds like there's something in your life that's helped you with this perspective. So, Neil, what has your experience been either as a child or as a parent that's helped you understand what your children need?
I'm a survivor of child-on-child sexual abuse. I was abused when I was 10 years old. And in that process around 10 years old, just after it sort of started to occur, because I was befriended by this person and I'd never had a friend before and I didn't know what a friendship was, so I just thought this was normal. So I came to a trusted adult And I said, is this normal? Is this what a friendship is? And they said, oh, no, you're just experimenting. And that abuse went on for another 3 years. I know what it is to not be listened to and heard and validated as a human. I don't want that for my children. I'm very passionate about making sure that our children do have a voice, that they do feel listened to and heard. And combined with that, I witnessed someone's suicide in front of me when I was 18 years old. And then also I've had other people in my life suicide. I know from the experiences of supporting them even before they did that and being on that journey, to know what they've explained to me of how they were looking for something, you know what I mean? Not just the people that have suicided, but those people that have told me they have been suicidal. So I think the thing for me is that my job as a parent is to make sure that my children are safe and whatever that looks like. And you can't avoid your own personal experiences. They will play out in your family. So I would say that my, you know, the sexual abuse that I've experienced, that has played out in my family in terms of my response to trauma. And that has been like, it might be, you know, yelling to at my daughter or my son or whatever it is and not meaning to, and then going to apologize and realizing that, you know, those sort of things. You can't put trauma on the shelf and think that it's not going to impact the rest of your life. And so for me, that's where I guess it stems from, really empowering our children to make sure they do have a voice.
You're using your voice. I'm sorry, your story just now, I'm just still collecting myself because it was so heart-wrenching to hear that someone has been through what you've been through and experienced that type of trauma. I'm amazed that you've come to the other side and you're now reaching out and helping other people because of your experience. So as a man in this space, how regularly do you see men talking about this openly?
I don't think it's talked about much at all. I think that when we experience trauma, we are forced to make a choice. In our life, we're forced to make a choice. And unfortunately, statistics will say that there's a lot of people who have been abused that are no longer with us, whether it be suicide or, you know, drug overdose or a number of different things. And I think we have a choice when we are impacted by that trauma of what that looks like. And when we have that support network, that's why it's so important. So I really believe that being a voice in this space provides the opportunity for other men, particularly, to speak up. If you look on LinkedIn, there's only a couple of people that I know, and there's probably others, but there's only a couple of people, men, that are speaking up. They've been abused. And the thing that I haven't seen is child-on-child abuse. Like, no one's speaking up about child-on-child abuse. Because, like this trusted adult, I thought, you know, they sort of said there was just experimenting. Well, I think that's the view of a lot of people. Now, if you get into the expert side of things, you'll see that that's not actually, and it is actually abuse, but it's not really talked about.
With any sort of child abuse, let alone child-on-child sexual abuse, is that a lot of the perpetrators make sure the victim doesn't speak. Looking at that situation, how do we get our children to trust us and then respond the way we should?
I think the best thing that we can do is create space for meaningful conversations. I think we live as parents, we live in this world where everything is so flat out. You know, we're taking kids to sporting, to swimming, to dance, to drama, to all these different things. And not to mention all the things that we're involved in as well. And I think what happens is before we know it, we blink and they're 18 years old. Like it is that quick. And that's what it feels like. And I think what I have learned, and this is why I created the Table Talk Project, is actually about creating space for everyone in the family to have a voice and to feel listened to and heard. And the way in which that we are creating space is around the dinner table. And the research says that if you have dinner a minimum once per week, up to 3 times, 5 times a week, but a minimum once per week, it can drastically improve your family connections, better relationships, and better mental health, not to mention reduce eating disorders, health, and better healthy eating, a number of different things that happens. And I believe that if a young person, if a child comes home and they have a loving home that supports them and they have a space to be able to talk and be able to speak and know that they have a voice and that nothing is off the table to be able to talk about, then I actually believe that could save their life. If a young person comes home and they don't have that and they don't feel like they have a voice and they've had a really crap day and they come home and they don't have an environment, the statistics would say that that actually could be the last day they live. What we're doing in our home is creating that space so that our children know that we are available and there is actually a time once a week, minimum once a week, where we actually eat together and we look at some conversation starters and have a check-in and make sure we're okay. We use the Table Talk Project web app that we created and really walk through that. They know they can come to us anytime, but when there's a dedicated time as well, they know that that Sunday night that we have is a really special time together as a family. Make it special.
When I was a child, Sundays were for Sunday roasts. You know, we had to be home for a roast dinner, which is a very traditional thing. I think there was a whole ad campaign around a roast lamb. Tom Cruise, yeah, evidently.
That's right.
So how did you actually arrive at that point? Because earlier you mentioned that, you know, your trauma had played out in your family, your immediate family, through you not coping with some of the issues you were facing, you know, in raising children, which we all do. So what was the catalyst and how did you actually move beyond that once you'd identified you didn't want to raise them with yelling?
It's interesting because I'm a social entrepreneur, so I start businesses to hopefully make society better. That's my passion. That's what my desire is. And in that process of creating the Table Talk Project, I did a bit of internal research, you know, that kind of internal conversation you're having with yourself that sometimes you involve others, you know, that one. And I started wrestling with my own family and my own experience as a family. And we ate dinner together every night, right? Like rain or shine. But no one talked. It was sit down, shut up and eat your vegetables, and I hate vegetables. And so it would be, you know, I'd be the last one there sitting there and sometimes I get a smack because that was back in the day is what it was experienced. I realised that I never had a voice in my home. You know, I never could talk about things that were going on. Like my parents didn't know I was, you know, doing drugs. They didn't know that I was drinking and a lot. They didn't know those things because we didn't create, there wasn't a space to create and there wasn't that trust there to really talk about those things. So I think that motivated me in, as I've become a parent and now I've got two teenagers and an adult and really realizing that time goes so fast and I reckon even in that time I've missed out on some really important conversations with my kids and so I don't want that anymore. I'm trying to create a home where they feel like they can feel like they're listened to and heard, but when they leave, they can still know they have a home where people feel listened to and heard.
That's so powerful. I am wondering, though, if you had a mentor or someone who helped you, because every change that I've been able to make in my life as a parent particularly, and a single parent at that, has been facilitated by a workshop, a course, some sort of program that's given me the tools to actually change something in the way I parented.
I've had lots of people in my life that have supported me, but I would say that, you know, when my son was saying he was suicidal, when we didn't know what was going on for him because, you know, now we realise that he's neurodiverse and got a mild intellectual disability, it was really lonely. Like, I have to say, it was so lonely and we felt like we were the only ones going through it. And when we talk to people that we thought we could trust, we realised that actually they weren't the people that we could trust. And so then we feel lonely again, you know, and still sometimes we do feel like that. Our family is not in the same state as us and we don't have that kind of relationship. So it's a little bit different from that perspective. But have we read self-help books? Have we read, you know, parenting books and things like that? Sure, there's been bits and pieces and things like that. But I think this has really been created from my own personal journey. And I think the power behind the Table Talk Project is my story. And what I realized as we did a bunch of research with other families was that was actually a lot of their story too. It was sit down, shut up. You know, it was children are seen but not heard and therefore their voice doesn't matter. I remember my wife told me that to shut her up, they gave her minties, you know what I mean, back in the day because she just used to talk and things like that. They just, you know, because they wanted to have a conversation. An adult, you know, you're a child, you don't, you know, that kind of thing. And it wasn't nothing against their parents, but just the reality was that that's their culture. And I guess I'm a big believer that you don't have to repeat the same mistakes in the next generation. And I believe that this, the Table Talk project, is about shaping the next generation. It's changing the culture from just because you're busy doesn't mean to you can't have a real conversation and ones that really are meaningful and matter.
Couldn't agree more. For me, I always wanted three things for my family that was different from the one I grew up in. And I grew up through the 70s with that same attitude you've just described. And I always wanted to have an experience, unconditional love, happiness, and inner peace. So what would you say are the values that the project shares with people who get involved?
I guess it's up to the family to create the kind of values that they feel will help with creating those meaningful conversations. So we're not prescriptive to say, oh, everyone has to sit and listen. Like, obviously, that's the goal. But if you're not used to not being in front of a TV, then going to a table straight away might be a bit too big a stretch. So it might be just turning the TV off or down and then sitting on the rug and having a, and then maybe moving from there to the table. The table is the vehicle for the conversation, not the be all and end all. And so what we're trying to create from that is to help families to be able to discover what's important to them. And what's important to us is that people feel listened to and heard, that people feel validated, that there is better connections and better relationships and better mental health, and that that's actually what really matters. And I think that if we don't make time, then time will disappear and we won't ever get that opportunity back. And I speak to families a lot, and I'm not just talking families. It could be singles as well. Build that into your relationship. If you want to have kids, then you've already got that routine established, right? I was speaking at an event recently and some empty nesters came up to me and said, you know, this is so good for us. We now have to navigate our own relationship without our children in that space. What a powerful tool to help us. So I think the thing is that helping the families and those that use our tools and services to support them to really build those connections that really matter and make those memories that really count and to help discover what's really important for them.
How do you think we've gotten to this point in human evolution as a society where we've departed the table in the first place?
I think that the need to be workaholics has become a badge of honour rather than an enemy to the family. I think the need for having a house and paying a mortgage and, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and that kind of mentality that we somehow have brought ourselves to a point where we have missed what we value and we're letting society dictate what we value. What's really interesting, there's this concept called slow food versus fast food. And the concept is a Mediterranean concept, but basically the deal is that fast food is obviously you get the food, you eat it. It's not about who you're with. It's just you just eat it, right? It's McDonald's, it's KFC, whatever it is. But slow food is often you've grown the food, so therefore you appreciate what you've grown. You invite people round to celebrate what you've grown, and then you appreciate who you're with and the conversations that you'll have and what you're eating. And I guess the Table Talk Project, you know, provides that opportunity to be able to take that slower food. I think one of the things for me is that, you know, I valued the time that the food that we had and we were able to eat together. What I longed for is something to have meaningful conversations. I long to feel listened to and heard. Like, I felt so lonely as a teenager, even though I had so many people around me. And I think that families often are split in different ways and different directions. And so coming together seems a bit foreign. And I guess that's really sad. And I want to bring that back because I know the benefits of how it can help people.
I think it was 2000 and... maybe 18, I travelled with Charles Alder to Sydney with Rural Aid at the time to a meeting with Mars, and they had done a online campaign and they interviewed parents and children separately about if they could have dinner with anyone in the world, famous, dead or alive, who would it be? And the parents were all thinking about celebrities, you know, and people that they admired. And then they brought the children in and most of them said, Mum and Dad. And it crushed me to think that we have come to a point where as adults we're sort of thinking about external things to us when our family is longing just to spend time and be with us. I commend you. Maybe you could run a campaign under the Table Talk Project and invite people to submit a similar type of social media campaign. How do you think that would go if we started sharing stories about even how we'd changed to the table and the benefit we get out of that?
Absolutely. I think that would be a magnificent idea. You know, I've watched that video so many times and it still brings me to tears because I've got two kind of thoughts that run in my head. Is the reason why the children are wanting to have dinner with their parents is because they don't now, and that's something that is foreign and they really enjoy it when it happens? Or is it that that's actually something they really value, but they've never been able to express that with their family before? You know, those are the two schools of thought. So when people are part of the Table Talk Project, they're invited to a private Facebook group where parents can share their experiences of what it's been like and, you know, what recipe worked or what conversation starter was great or their time or whatever it is. I'm trying to build that. It's very difficult to build that, but build that community where people feel safe to share their own experiences. I would love to see a campaign, you know, and that's why the actual web app is called Back at the Table, because we realise it can't be called At the Table because a lot of people aren't there yet, right? And so we've created this tool called Back at the Table, which actually helps them to and remind them it's actually, we've got to get back to the table. That's actually where the gold is, and that's where the memories are made, and that's where the relationship is. So, yes, I think we should partner together to do that campaign. I think that'd be super powerful.
I'd love to get involved. I'm happy to do anything that brings together collectives of people who had and share values that bring children back into where they need to be, which is with their family.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's great. I did a post on a notice board where I live, and it went nuts, and I just couldn't believe it because I wasn't expecting it. And there was no negative comments at all. Just comments like, thank you so much for creating this. When I was a kid, this is what we had, but now we don't do it because we're too busy or this, you know, that kind of thing. And it was really interesting. There was a study done in 2019 by Old El Paso, the old the Mexican brand, food brand, and News Corp. And they surveyed 1,000 families, and they found that 7 in 10 don't eat together. 7 in 10 don't eat together out of that 1,000. And the rest, they fight or they argue or they end up whatever it is. And at the end, it said, what would actually help you as a family? And they all said, it's conversation starters. It's actually talking about things that are deeply. And that's what we help provide. It's not cards or anything. It's a web app so we can gather data and things like that to help improve that. I think that's the thing, is that a lot of people actually, I think it goes deeper than the dinner table. I think it's actually a lot of families don't even know how to communicate. And so even just communicating to each other, what it actually means to truly listen, what it means to truly respond and to support and to fight for each other and what they're going through. And, you know, I actually think it's so much deeper than just coming together. It's actually we don't know how to come together. And so I guess we provide that way for people to come together but also to have those conversations.
Well, another organisation that comes to mind in regards to those tools is Safe Talk. So that's another, you know, thing people can do within communities for free if they don't know where to begin and they do have someone who is struggling. That teaches you how to respond to someone who isn't, you know, coping. And it gives you the tools to have those conversations, like you just said. So you're doing great work, Neil. I am actually enamoured and you're my latest hero. So thank you so much for sharing your story.
That's all right. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so grateful to be here.
Mealtime is one of the few times families can be together, which is what social entrepreneur Neil Milton wants us all to do. Get back to the table. If you'd like to join him, sign up to the Table Talk project online and you'll be connected to a community of people who, just like you, have disconnected and want to reconnect in a meaningful way. All the details and links are in the description of this episode. Make sure you follow What We Teach Our Children and subscribe to the podcast so you'll be notified when new episodes appear. This podcast is recorded at Launchpad Studios thanks to Split Spaces, a nest for new ideas.